there's plenty of options. I don't mind driving, but if it's the Mercedes Sprinter van, it's going to take a big space.
Yeah.
No, we just do the caravan of wandering idiots.
Or, listen, I've driven many a vehicle in many weird places, so I'm not too worried. But
that worries me personally.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 561 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Fosma Moon. Gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Foz, you're about to go on your big overseas trip. Well, both of you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
When do you leave, Foz?
Thursday.
And Seth, you leave?
Over the weekend with a weird caveat of a stop in New York along the way.
Gotcha. Are you guys going with anybody? Or are you just going by yourselves?
On our own.
On your own. And then Seth, your guy.
Oh, well, my wife's coming along, so that's important.
Foz's wife is coming too.
You never know. We're meeting up with some friends over in Asia. So
very nice.
Yeah.
So I have a topic that my wife brought up, and okay. I want to get y'all's thoughts. So we've talked about like taking our kid over.
Hang on a second. I want to be clear. Stephen would not share with us in advance what this topic is.
Yes.
We're reading about this for the first time right now.
So we talked about like going overseas with our kiddo, and there's places he wants to go, London being one of them. And we're just the biggest hurdle for us is the flight, because he's a typical 4-year-old and just like wants to move. And my wife was like in the car yesterday while I'm driving, says to me, well, what happened to the Concorde? And I
might have had it blow up.
I explained there was a crash. She goes, and then I told her who it was. And she's like, of course it was Air France.
It's Continental's fault, remember?
I told her that. And then I said, well, and also 2001, 9/11. Like its fate was kind of already sealed.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, but can you imagine? And then I told her, well, there is another airline trying to do this. And I told her, boom. And she goes, that's a terrible name. So. Yeah. What about the, are we actually ever going to see supersonic travel? Because I told her it's like 2 hours from New York to London.
It's not brief,
amazing, you know? So,
well, revisiting the past 6-ish months of Boom's not so public publicity, the company skipped the Paris Air Show this year, choosing not to exhibit. And I want to see if I can find the email I got from them asking about it, because It was telling, in that they were, do I have it here? Here we go. Boom will not be exhibiting at the Paris Air Show this year, as the team is fully focused on building the Symphony, Engine, and Overture airliner at this time. Catch up on all of our announcements here, blah, 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 link. Thank you. From a comms team, but whatever. Like 3 months later, the company had an exhibit at NBAA, which was the Business Aviation Conference in Las Vegas, which is held every October, issuing a quote, Boom does not currently plan to build business jets, but we are supportive of opening up competition in the space. With so many developments and milestones towards the return of supersonic travel in 2025, now is a great time to engage with this audience.
I mean, it sounds like they're going to make business jets instead of full-blown passenger jets.
Which, from a size perspective, like, probably won't work. I mean, it's a very different construction.
Yeah, and it's cost prohibitive, like, you're going to burn a lot of fuel.
Yeah, like, what, Spike was the one that tried to do it, maybe?
I think so.
There's been a few, that, like, the one backed by Boeing that went out of business, and it's like, yeah, never mind. Although, maybe that's not the damning endorsement that it should be. No, Boom is, you know, confident that the repeal, quote, we do believe the repeal of the supersonic overland ban will unlock innovation and competition in both the commercial and business aviation space. Now that supersonic flight is allowed over the U.S., a supersonic business jet absolutely should exist. Here's the money quote, though. Boom will gladly license our technology to anyone interested in making this product. We hope someone does this. If not, we'll consider entering the market once Overture is in service.
We'll consider.
They want someone else to pay for it. Like, and yes, I do believe that their best chance of actually getting into production is if the U.S. government decides to try to buy some of these theoretical jets. There's a lot of talk about progress and timelines. I was trying to find my notes on when they said they were going to have the engine testing ready. Because this article, basically was like, oh yeah, we've got more than half the parts. Here we go. We're building the first full scale engine and more than half of the parts on that engine are already in manufacturing. So you'd think that means like they're super close to being able to start spinning it with stuff happening, but, not happening.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a couple things. So my wife actually asked that. She's like, well, why can't we just go? Cause I told her we had to go to New York to do supersonic flight. She's like, well, why can't you do it from like Seattle or Portland? I said, because there's a ban on supersonic flight over land in the United States and in a lot of places. Well, and then I told her there's an executive order that was supposed to get rid of this. She's like, but okay. So she's like, their name is Boom, but they're going to make the technology quieter so that it doesn't make a boom.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Yes.
Everybody buys snake oil, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, she would love this technology to actually exist and be possible. I'm glad you gave us some clarity on what's actually going on.
Yeah. I did find my reporting from beginning of this year about the timeline. It was when they got XB-1, which was their demonstrator, supersonic. It ran its test flights, and then they retired it. And at the time, we'll start building the first Overture in about 18 months. Our goal is to begin making thrust on the Symphony engines around the end of this year. So we're 6 weeks from the end of the year. They've only got half, and admittedly this article came out 4 weeks ago. So we're 10 weeks from the end of the year when the article was written, and they've only got half the parts in production. So once again, the timeline has slipped. They have never come close to actually meeting any of their target timelines. But the goal is still to be ready for passengers by the end of 2029. That number hasn't changed in several years now, even as everything else keeps slipping.
Did they say when in 2029 or just a general?
Ready for passengers by the end of 2029.
End of 2029. Okay, so they've got 4 years.
Yeah. And by the way, certification is only going to take like 8 to 12 months.
Okay, so they got 3 years.
Months, yeah. Which, by the way, is an incredibly fast certification cycle for a brand new aircraft type for passengers.
When you don't have an engine? Yeah.
Well, that needs a separate certification.
Well, that they just do the.
It looks nice. That's all that matters.
And they didn't go to the Paris Air Show, and that saved them probably a week of effort. So
yeah, and a couple hundred grand, right? That's the important thing. It's just funny to me. Like, no, we're so focused on building this airplane that we're not dealing with sales anymore. Except now we're going to a business aviation show where we have no business trying to find people to invest in us or license our technology. I almost respect the hustle.
Let's talk about Virgin Atlantic. So. They unveiled a lifetime status?
Like lifetime junior.
Lifetime, so it's not really lifetime?
Well, it's not status. I guess it is status. Lifetime loyalty.
Okay.
But it's not for people who have established like elite status over the years.
Okay.
If you have flown any ticket, paid or award, just a single segment on Virgin Atlantic Metal, and I assume credited to Flying Club, since 2021 or 2020, any one flight each year counts, and after 5 years of doing that, you get this lifetime status.
What does it get you?
A one-time bonus of 12,000 points, which is not nothing, and a 10% bonus on all future flights.
Okay.
And it's additive to any real status you might earn.
I mean, 12,000 is not shabby when you consider, like, United gives you 40,000 for making another million.
Yeah. And I'm just double checking my dates. It's starting 2021. So, yeah, they backdated it, which is an interesting bit, right? Like, they could have a number of people who have already qualified when it officially launches in January of 26. But it is a legitimate recognition of lifetime loyalty, and sort of addresses the, I do fly you a lot, but I do it for leisure and not, you know, 30 times a year. Why don't you be nicer to me? Problem.
I mean, it's a nod to lifetime loyalty if you're 5 years old.
Just one way of looking at it.
I'm just saying it goes back to the 2021. I mean,
and it's alive going forward. You know, it's
yeah. I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I think this is. And I should clarify what I just said, a gift horse in the mouth. I don't think this is a bad thing. What I find interesting, though, is that they're doing it now. Like, I feel like Virgin's been struggling to, they continue to dwindle their London flights. We've talked about that before. They've added some new stuff, but they definitely are pointing towards like a leisure airline. It's kind of the vibe I get. And this, I don't know, reinforces that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think the number of flights is really changing out of London. And they cut Gatwick.
Gatwick, yeah, is the big one.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was going to say, yep. Like, Heathrow, the slots are too valuable. They won't cut that shit. But.
Well, Gatwick and they've drastically cut their Manchester.
Yeah.
Right, and the other thing to consider is, like, think of how small their planes have gotten, right? From a carrier that used to have 346s and 346-100s and 747s, they're 789s and 359s per dollar, or 330s.
They got some 1,000s, don't they?
Yeah, but they have a couple of 350-1,000s, yeah.
Yeah, but not many in comparison to what they were.
Yeah. Yeah, no, average fleet size has definitely gotten, or aircraft size has definitely gotten smaller over the past decade.
So, to your point, though, Seth, I think this is like a nod to the leisure travelers. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing. It makes me wonder, it is like Virgin kind of, it's fading a little bit. It feels like it's fading, and that's all perception. They actually have like 12 351,000s or 13.
Yeah, I thought so. Like, and yes, Gatwick is gone. Heathrow, they did have more slots. They traded some away. Actually, it's interesting. They had a bunch more 2015 than they did for the few years in between, but they got them basically back 2023, 24, 25. Manchester, we talk about it dropping, but number of departures hasn't changed that much, nor has number of seats. Versus like 2015 was 400,000 seats across 1,200 flights. 2025 is 382,000 seats across 1,200 flights. Heathrow, 25 is 3.3 million seats across 11,500 flights. Actually, more seats. It's the most seats they've ever had out of Heathrow.
Wow. Well, and all they have is 351,000. They don't have 359.
Okay, yeah. The last few years, and I could go back further, I guess, and see if it's even, you know, if I go back to 2005 instead of 2015, where things look. But I do think, yeah, they really, we talk about them shrinking, but they have grown in some ways. That really, the 3.32 million seats is the most I've ever flown out of Heathrow this year.
And is it to mostly leisure destinations?
I'm not looking at the destinations right now. That makes this chart too hard to read.
I won't ask you to do that.
But I guess the thing I'm confused
about, definitely down.
How do you go from a bunch of 764s and 340-600s to smaller planes and still maintain the same seat count? Did they add that many more flights?
It's probably, some of it is more planes, some of it is the 351,000 is big.
The 351,000 has a lot of seats.
But more than a 74?
Let me see. I can tell you. I'm looking right now. Let's see if Aeroloba has the historic. They don't have the historic. So it's the 351,000 has come in two configs. One has 44J, 56 premium Y, and then 235Y. The other is 16J, 56 premium, and 325Y. So,
that's almost the same as the 416 seats they have on their 744.
Yep.
Okay.
And 266 was on with the other flights out of Manchester, which I assume was a 330.
Yeah.
So, it's the 351,000 can get very close to the 744, and they got more of them. I don't know. There. But the numbers suggest that it's not quite as bad as we're making it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, I just was trying to wonder what their motivation was for doing this. That's really my thinking.
Yeah, I think it's they remain a small player in a busy market, and anything you can do to try to drum up some loyalty, and this is a relatively low cost way to do it, especially because remember, like, the 10% is on the new earning levels, which are not good for leisure travelers.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like a kind of a, we'll give you something small.
Yeah.
Next topic. So the government's reopened. I actually have a friend that I know that is in the military, and he hasn't gotten paid. And I was talking to him yesterday, and he says they told him it could be 6 weeks for him to get a backdated check.
Yeah.
So he's not happy. But anyway, the government's reopened. Are flights completely back yet, Seth?
The FAA is holding at a 3% cut, I think, right now, which is like...
It's 3% right now.
But also still limiting business aviation traffic, private jets to a dozen or so airports, and also limiting commercial rocket launches off of Florida to only being overnight.
And they did that at the beginning of the FAA cuts, right? The rocket launch thing?
It was like the second bit, but yeah, it came as a second phase, but it was part of that.
Which I actually thought that was a good move. That was smart. Like whoever was like, we should probably do that too.
People have been complaining about the rocket launches impacting operations off the coast, like, and it's the north-south stuff to Florida mostly for a long time, because it basically anything going north-south that has overwater capabilities, they put out over the water.
Yep.
And then it rather than following the coast down, and it just opens up a lot more airspace. And if they take that away down off the coast of Orlando, Jacksonville gets super busy, and Jacksonville is one of Jacksonville Center, the air traffic control there. And Jacksonville is one of the key staffing sort of soft spots. And, you know, after Newark or now Philadelphia term Area C. So they did say that there was a record high of 81 staffing triggers since November 8th. It was down to just 4 on November 13th. So maybe everybody went back to work. I don't know. I did see there was a staffing trigger for Newark today, which, you know, happens, but hard to blame on the shutdown or anything associated with that. They also said that because the staffing at Newark, the training pipeline hasn't progressed the way that it's supposed to, the FAA now is talking about trying to extend the stay of those controllers in Philadelphia. I think I mentioned you guys, I talked to some of them earlier this year, and they were pretty vehement that they weren't going to do that. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
The reason they want him to stay in Philadelphia is to relieve some of the, like, they want that center there because it's got better connectivity, or is it relieving something else? Like, what's the reasoning?
They want the staffing is going to stay there. They're not moving control of that area back to N90, back to New York.
Okay.
The issue is that they basically took a bunch of people from Long Island and moved them to Philly, and were like, you're here for the next 2 years. You'll help train the staff that are going to take over, and then you get to go home and not worry about it. And right, and these are guys that are like, get it. You know, one of them I talked to basically got an apartment down near Philly and commutes down, worked for a few days, and then goes home and sees his family.
Not a great decision. Yeah. All right.
So there, but he was pretty clear that he didn't plan to stick around. He, you know, was very excited about getting to go home and not have to deal with the commute and all the other challenges associated, and just it's understaffed, right? Like going back to N90 and working with a better staffing levels would be great. And he's not keen on that, you know, extending it. And he mentioned he thought it might get extended, and he was pretty vehement that he wasn't going to do it. But, you know, push comes to shove, who knows? But we'll see.
It's amazing what money will do if you throw some more money at it.
Yeah. You know, yes, and as someone who has walked away from far higher paying jobs before because I didn't want to do the work that was going to be required, it doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't always work, but it does incentivize.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we fix this ATC problem from a staffing perspective? Excuse me. So I have a few ideas. One of the things that's at the core here is that you can't be over 31 to enter trout controller school. And then you have a mandatory retirement at the age of 56.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there an age limit to start? I know that there's like a return on investment, but someone's got to be doing the math to go, hey, maybe if we hire people that are a little bit older, and even if they have to retire at 56, we still fill the gap. Like, I don't know why we would do that. And then they want to qualify. I think what I've read is it's to qualify people for their pension. And I'm like, if people need a job, and it pays well enough, I don't know. It seems like a good idea to raise the age limit. Any thoughts on that? Would you feel less safe?
I wouldn't feel less safe if a 35-year-old, you know, brand new controller started as opposed to a 25-year-old. But it was, I understand wanting to try to get the value out of it. I don't know if that's going to be enough to, like, how many people are out there like, should I turn 32, but now I want to be an air traffic controller? I guess I can't anymore.
Yeah.
As opposed to, right, like, also, the pipeline is relatively full, is my understanding. Like, it's not that there's empty slots in the training facilities. It's that part of it is they're not getting, you know, the washout rate remains an issue. And part of it is just that there's only so much throughput that they have. They can only get so many people through at any given time, and a bunch are going to be retiring out because they're starting to hit the right ages. Right. This is a long-term problem without a short-term solution.
Well, I mean, I think you need to start filling that pipeline sooner, and maybe you need to add capacity. But I'm saying you need to add capacity to the pipeline.
Yeah.
For you know.
Sure. And like They're certifying more community colleges and universities to do it outside of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Which is where the main training is, right? So I actually got to go to a thing. It's a nice thing about being a state rep. I got invited to go see the local community college, whatever, in this week's session, or a couple months ago now, but this session was about their air traffic controller facility. They have a training facility up here in Nashua at the community college. And so I got to sit down and like talk to the machine and let it do its voice recognition and decide if I cleared the plane correctly or not to depart.
Did you pass or fail?
I am almost certain that the guy administering it and like monitoring was clicking around and making sure that none of us were embarrassed. Let's just say I'm pretty sure I didn't get it right. I kept looking at him like, what was that call sign again? Also, like the presentation going on and I was trying to pay attention. And he just kept laughing and reading it back to me. And then I saw I'd click a button and make sure it happened. So I would assume I didn't get it right the first time.
Gotcha. It's problem that we need to sort through at some point.
Yeah.
And
I don't know that age limit is the problem so much as, you know, inconsistent federal funding and, you know, having the programs start and historically it would start and stop every time there was a shutdown, and that threw everything off as well. I think this past shutdown, they actually kept the school running, but
no, I mean, to be fair to people 31, they may wake up one day and go, when they're 32 and go, I want to be an air traffic controller. I'm in my 40s. I still don't know what I want to do. So it's a very real thing.
Yeah.
If you're not sure, watch Pushing Tin.
It's a good movie, actually.
It is a good movie.
And then we've heard rumors. There's been a bunch of rumors about people getting booted from Global Entry. Have you guys heard this?
I saw one little bit about it.
It seems like it's been happening for a few years, where there's like a big wave of people that get removed from GE and then have to appeal it. And I can't find any like news stories about it, really. It's mostly been tweets that I've seen or Blue Sky, whatever. So I can't find like anything that like backs this up. But there have been people who've said, I got booted from GE, and I don't know what's going on. Maybe they're like clearing their books after so many years. Like they're looking at who's traveled, who's not traveled, and the people who've been inactive, they've removed it from. I don't know.
Are these non-renewals, or are these people who are like one day show up for the pre-check lane and are like, haha, piss off?
I think it's that.
So non-travel shouldn't be a disqualifier.
Yeah.
I mean...
But part of the wild card about Global Entry, when you dig through the agreements you sign and what have you, you basically give the government carte blanche to go through and mine any data around you from anyone. And so there are, I've seen some cases where people order something, even on something as innocent as Amazon, and it ends up being counterfeit, and then it gets held against them as buying something counterfeit and illegal.
Well, and like, I wonder...
A thought on Amazon counterfeit these days?
And it's just knockoff stuff. There's a difference between counterfeit and knockoff.
Okay.
The other thing, too, that I've heard is Global Entry, because they do track, they have carte blanche to, like, track you, it is looking at, like, if you get arrested and is backdating, like, it's going back and, like, clearing up the logs based on that, because you're no longer in agreement with some of the regs of Global Entry.
I mean, that was always part of it, though. I'm surprised they would... Let me see how I phrased this correctly. I would have assumed, based on how they phrased the original enrollment, that they were checking those records previously.
I think they were, and maybe people didn't notice, or the people who did it. I mean, now it's like people seem to be getting caught up in it, I feel like. And maybe it's what Foz said. I don't know. It's just very odd.
Yes. Has happened to me yet, and I've been to Cuba twice, and, you know.
I think part of it is also people are posting all sorts of stuff in public forums. That's all getting fined. Right. People have forgotten that whatever you say on the internet can and will be used against you.
Don't type things in the internet.
Yeah. Keep your thoughts to yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I think the reason maybe we're hearing more about this too, Seth, is that people are posting it, that they've gotten it revoked, and we're seeing it pop up more places like Flyer Talk, Reddit, Twitter. It's just showing up.
So to put this in perspective, right, if I remember, I'm going to try to remember the numbers I read. It was a 44% increase this year, but that ended up being 17 or 18,000 people out of a couple million that are enrolled in Global Entry. It's not
increase, you know, high percentage increase from a low base is not necessarily a large number.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, why does it always feel like every time I go through Global Entry, like everyone on the plane is with me?
Because you get off first.
Oh, Oh, man. Let's talk about Beyond Airlines and New Pacific. What? There's a name I didn't think I'd hear again.
Foss is excited for this one.
Okay. Tell me about it, Seth.
Oh, I thought we were going to Foss try to explain it.
Okay, Foss, you explain it then.
Oh, I don't even remember all the details. I just know that the two went into a partnership to have domestic U.S. operations.
Basically, yeah. You posted about it earlier. I wasn't sure how much you'd read into it. So Beyond is a Maldives-based carrier. Maldivian? I don't know how we say that.
I think that's right.
Okay, Maldivian airline. They own two aircraft today, an A319 and an A321, configured in a 2-2 all-business class layout. It's the Optimar SD, which is the same as what Hawaiian put on its 330s or similar to. It's designed for couples traveling together because, you know, going to the Maldives often is a luxury experience for couples traveling together. Fine. They started flying nonstop service. Well, it was supposed to always be nonstop service from Europe to the Maldives. The 319 with its limited range was the first plane they had, and they did some tech stops and flag stops in the Middle East along the way at one point. But the general gist of it is all premium airline experience. And it seems to be doing okay-ish, I guess. Fine, whatever. Last week they announced that they've signed a partnership with New Pacific, the formerly known as Northern Pacific, and also Raven, which was the commuter airline operator in Alaska that is, I believe, stopped, if not all, almost all of its local stuff up there out of Anchorage. They wanted to fly 757s between secondary cities in the United States and mostly Japan and Korea. That fell apart between COVID and, you know, just being a silly idea. But they ultimately they operated some domestic stuff with their 757s. They bought a bunch of used ones cheap. Eventually, they stopped operating all of that. Guy who was in charge left. We moved on. I had actually thought they were done. It turns out they've been operating some charter stuff. Sports teams and whatnot. And now apparently they're going to acquire Beyond Americas, which is a new subsidiary, is going to acquire up to eight aircraft, new to them, 320 and 321s, outfit them similarly with the 2-2 all premium layout, and take advantage of New Pacific's US based authorization, certifications, whatever you want to call it, to operate routes to, from, and within the United States. And I don't know where they, you know, timing and route specifics, TBD. Also, acquisition timing of these aircraft and retrofits to TBD. But the only thing I could think of that almost vaguely made sense is that there are these, like, residence clubs in the Hawaiian Islands.
Okay.
That fly, they have, like, pseudo-charter operations, like, once or twice a week. It's like Oakland to Kona or something. And it's, you have to own a house in the neighborhood and pay extra and, but it's just shuttle service for people who own second homes. And currently they're operated on similar executive configuration, single aisle planes. So like, sure, why not throw this at it? That's charter stuff. If they try to get into scheduled service, which maybe will also happen, I cannot imagine where the market is going to support that, such that Beyond can compete against whatever the big four, big five, big six are going to throw at it. And big four plus two small, two mediums, I don't know how you want to call it anymore, but American, Delta, United, Alaska, Southwest, JetBlue. Obviously Southwest, not a premium airline, but hey, they got extra legroom now, so who the hell knows?
Do you think they would do anything transatlantic? Like, would they compete with La Company or anything?
I don't know if they... With a 321 in an all business configuration, you could cross the Atlantic. You couldn't go too far unless it's an LR or a NEO even. And historically, they bought older model aircraft. So that's will depend on the aircraft, I would say. Also, you try to do that across the Atlantic. Now you've got a whole nother level of competitors excited to play with, you know, bat you around. You know, could maybe there be some sort of premium demand from Miami to certain Caribbean islands or South Florida to the Caribbean, New York to the Caribbean, maybe.
But could they use New Pacific 757s for the transatlantic stuff?
The agreement calls for only using these Airbus planes. The New Pacific fleet will remain its own.
Okay.
Whatever. I did ask about that. because I thought about like reconfiguring them after they've, from the American layout would have been harder.
It's too bad it's a 319 and not a 318. So they could have gone back to city. Yeah, this is weird. I don't get it. I mean, was the Maldives stuff just not working out from a financial perspective?
Yeah, this is an addition. They're not failing.
They're going to keep it.
Okay. Yeah. They're setting up a multi-certificated, like multi-domain, multinational AOC organization. Sort of almost like the Air Asia setup, where you've got Air Asia of different countries.
Yeah.
And they want some of them, and each of them is independent, but they sort of all market under common branding.
Yep.
It's going to be that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to say. It's just bizarre to me. I mean, the thing that you talk about with Hawaii makes the most sense, but
yeah.
Comac is looking to invest in Lao Airlines, 49%. They're going to buy. I guess
there's, at some scale, the equivalent of Boeing or Airbus, Airbus buying 40% of Air Algeria or something like that.
I mean, I guess you really, really want them to fly your planes.
You know what it is? This is Embraer investing in Avelo.
There you go. Yeah.
Or not confirmed. No, it's never been publicly confirmed that Embraer is the funding for that. But it happened that the funding was announced, and then a day later they announced they're buying a bunch of Embraer planes that don't align with their business model.
Yeah, I think that's like the thing.
It's gonna be great.
I'm trying to read this news, this take here. So the government will still have a 51% stake, builds on a memorandum, an MOU signed in October 24, and follows the addition of the C919 aircraft to their fleet in April 2025.
And that's one way to get your airplanes out there.
Yeah.
Apparently Comac wanted a majority stake, but the Lao government didn't want that.
And remember that, like, Comac is the Chinese government.
Yes.
Are we going to dance around it as much as you want, but it is the Chinese government.
Super interesting. Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
Was Lao, do you think Lao was struggling financially? I hadn't read anything that they were.
I mean,
because it's a government airline.
You're a tiny national carrier in a tiny country overrun in a market overrun by low cost competition. So, yeah, I'd assume it's struggling.
Yeah. Yep. So, you need an investment. All right. Anything else you guys want to chat about in the main show?
No,
we got some stuff regarding San Antonio and Southwest Airlines. We got Emirates getting some more A380s. Air Astana, we're going to talk about them a little bit. And then LOT, we're going to talk about them. So stick around if you're a Patreon supporter. We will talk to you then. Until then, happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See you later.